Hey, Smart Brand Marketing. We're back. Today with me, I have Dan Martell. He is an expert in scaling software businesses. What's up, Dan?
Nothing much, Tom. I'm super excited to be here, man. I appreciate the opportunity.
Yeah. I've looked over your website. You know, it's pretty impressive. I just realized that Clarity, which I signed up for not long ago, it's your thing. I was like, holy shit.
I built Clarity. I started in 2012, scaled it to, I think, 50,000 experts, hundreds of thousands of calls, and then we got acquired in 2014. So it's been 4 years now since I exited the business. So love to see it continue to grow and scale. Sounds like you obviously came across it, but it was an incredible, fun time. You know, we had Mark Cuban as an investor, and I just love building tech.
That's sweet, man. Let me ask you something, because I just had this conversation with a buddy of mine, you know, and he's like, Tom, you know, a lot of us from Chiang Mai, because I'm in Thailand right now, we're moving to San Francisco. And I'm like, okay, why? He's like, well, we finally got to decide, do we work hard for 4 years and exit with $100 million, investment and you retire, or do you just want to work for the rest of your life? And I'm like, is it really that simple? Let me ask an investor what he thinks about this.
Yeah, the answer is absolutely not. I think, at the end of the day, what I've learned, and look, I was fortunate. I moved to San Francisco 2008. And this is after two failed startups, finally built this company, Spheric, over a four-year period. And, you know, we're doing $3.5 million in revenue. I ended up exiting that to a U.S. firm. And then it was only after that that I said, okay, let's see if any of my crazy ideas would hold water in San Francisco in the Valley. In the first couple months, I met guys like Drew Houston from Dropbox, Brian and Joe from Airbnb, Travis Kalanick from Uber. So Travis was an investor in my company, Flowtown. That was the one I eventually started when I moved down there. Okay. And so I've been fortunate to have spent time with a lot of, you know, Jeff Lawson from Twilio. I was just at his office a month ago, $8.4 billion company, publicly traded. It is so rarefied air to pull that off that anybody going there with that goal, I would bet against, only because the reason why those founders that I just mentioned won wasn't because they had that goal ever. The goal that they've always focused on is creating value and solving a problem and falling in love with that problem, period. The money was a byproduct of that focus. So, and honestly, I would move to San Francisco right now. I would move to Austin. I think Austin's got the next up and coming, more cost effective, still incredible community. So, that's just my two cents.
No, it's good. That was going to be my next question. Like, would you actually, say that San Francisco is where you need to be as a startup? You know, like
I think you need to go. So one of the things I teach my clients that I coach is you know, on at least a twice a year minimum. So what happened is I moved down there. My mission was to like someday over the next 10 years, you know, start a company, scale it, raise venture capital, and exit. And that just happened a lot faster than I thought. So I remember the day that we signed the paperwork on Flowtown. We got acquired by Demandforce. It was about 3 years to the day. From moving down there to exit. And it was crazy. I mean, like I just, you know, it was a nice to have goal. I didn't think it would happen. But to me, I think, you know, and then after that I did Clarity and I started it there, but I built my team back here and then we had a baby. So I had to move back here and then make San Francisco. So all I did is I every 7 weeks I was on a route. And it was New York, San Francisco, either Toronto or Vancouver, and then back home where I live in Canada. So if you wanted to optimize it, I would say every 2 months, you know, for a week. If you needed to do minimum, I would say twice a year. But if you're in tech, I think it's important just to even be inspired by seeing the way people act and communicate and the ideas and the quality of teams. And I just think it's inspiring to go down there. So that's why I have a group that I coach 3 times a year. We go to Boston, San Francisco, and Toronto. And as a group, when we're there, we actually go visit companies and see how world-class companies execute. That's why we're at thumbtack.com, Marco, the founder and CEO. We're at, you know, as I mentioned, Jeff at Twilio. We've visited Jason at WP Engine, Noah Kagan at sumo.com. I just think it's important to physically be and see what world-class execution looks like if that's your goal in life.
That makes sense. So let's get to the topic. What does an investor look for in businesses, and how do you look at businesses? You know, because it's different from someone like me who's building one, you know, because you're on the other side of the table now.
Yeah, and I think that investor is such a broad term. So I'm an angel investor in high tech companies. So I've been super lucky to have been first investor in Intercom, Udemy, Hootsuite, Unbounce, and you know 36 other companies, 30 maybe more now over the years. And I've been doing it for over a decade. So that's a different investor than you know a local kind of business investor, right? In a community that's by like a local, you know, pizza shop or a car wash kind of thing. High tech is high risk, high reward. And I've also sold my agency. So the first company I ever exited, my company Spheric, that was more of an agency. So I understand the, you know, what those kind of outcomes look like and what investors value. But I think at the end of the day, I'll give you a quick framework. I call it the rule of 21, because I think this is powerful for anybody to understand. Well, let's do on the investment versus the exit. So on the investment side, what do investors look like? They look for an incredible team. At the end of the day, that's the only thing we're betting on. In the early days, that is the only thing I'm betting on is, do I trust this team? Do they have the pedigree? Do they have the background? Do they care about the problem? Do they inspire me? That's a big thing I look for personally. Every time I meet with the founding team, I wanna walk away going, man, I feel inspired, or I've learned something. They teach me things. And then it's obviously like just performance over time, you know, traction. Can they say where they're going and over time be directionally accurate with that prediction? Because at the end of the day, it's not about the idea. I have people leaving comments on my YouTube videos all the time saying like, you know, there's this one guy today. He's like, I've done all these things. I've called the market. I had the idea for Uber Eats before and all these things. And I called Bitcoin and Ether and all the, and he's like, no VC will take me seriously. It's like, it doesn't matter. Like, who cares how good you are at seeing things? You know, that's why when you think of like licensing deals, they're 1 or 3%. Like the reason why people will license your product and pay you 1 or 3% royalties is because all the heavy lifting is in the work, not in the idea. So I just think that investors want to know that you can actually execute, that you've got the team. 90% of the time, the thing I invest in is not the thing that succeeds per se. You know, it might be in the same space and the same tooling, but you might change customer segment. You might change the product direction. You might change the whole team that I've met. As a founder, I've seen many times the people that got you here won't get you there. And that's just part of the journey. And I would say at a high level, those are the things I look for as an investor.
You mentioned traction. What are you looking for? What kind of speed? What's the trajectory that you would be looking for in a
tech
company?
Space?
Yeah.
Yeah, tech space, 10% weekly compounded growth.
Okay.
Which is a crazy number. If anybody's ever achieved it, I have. It takes maniacal focus, like a level of focus and saying no to things that most people will never understand.
Interesting. Would you say to build a good tech startup, you have to be a developer, or do you think you could partner with or hire one out?
I think that it's great if you could have somebody part of your founding team that's a technical person. In regards to pattern matching, I think that that's the case more often than not, but that's definitely not the deciding factor by any means. Even my co-founder Ethan at Flowtown, he's now doing digit.co. He's raised $30 million in funding. He's 31 years old now, super impressive young dude. He doesn't write code. So I don't think it's required. I think it's good to have, but it's just like, you know, saying, well, if I'm going to start a restaurant, maybe I should be a chef. Good idea. Not required. You can always hire a chef. But you know, understanding how to manage those people is definitely something you're going to have to fix either through advisors or through, you know, doing that, the research.
What else makes a business attractive in your eyes other than a team?
Other than the team, obviously just the market opportunity. So, you know, I think if somebody has a really clever way to solve a problem, that's what I'm looking at. I call those product hooks. If they can get a really cool product hook in a market, solve an unmet need for the customer in a really interesting business model way as well. So like, obviously I'm a big fan of high gross margin. That's why I like software. The fractional cost of a new customer is pennies for the most part with software. Unless you have like a really heavy kind of customer success process or sales process. So it's the model, right? But those are all secondary because I feel like a good team can get you there. But, is the market big enough to build a big business? You know, sometimes I think that entrepreneurs, you know, come from a certain industry and they know it well. And they're like, here's what we're going to do. We're cool with a $5 million a year business. Great. It's not for me as a tech investor. Just because the only way it works for us is that if everybody has the vision to drive to 100 million in 7 years, and if anybody wants to do anything less than that, then it just doesn't work from a portfolio point of view as a tech investor. For me, anyways, in the way I do it. Some other people do, you know, smaller check sizes, smaller exits, but they do more. I like to invest in 3 to 4 companies a year and invest, you know, with that vision of 100 million exit in the next 7 years.
When you invest in a company and it's starting to fail for some reason, do you have a formula or a system that you go in with? Like, you know, the profit guy, he goes in with his 3-step formula to fix any business. Do you have anything like that?
For the tech stuff, it's totally different, right? It's not, that's the difference between high tech and normal businesses. Normal businesses is pure math, right? Like you can, you know, it's kind of like losing weight. It's a mathematical equation of less calories, more energy. With technology, it's different because it's kind of like you have two problems to solve. You have the product problem, then you have the market. So you can have the right product in the wrong market and fail. You have the right market, wrong product and fail. So for me, if I feel like a company's not gaining the level of traction, my playbook is always to work backwards from the customer. And if the customer segment that they're going after with their solution isn't working, we either need to reposition the product as it's being positioned today. So maybe they're saying things that are confusing and not interesting, and or go and test a new market. And then if that doesn't work, then we're going to look at the resources and the infrastructure that we've built so far and ask ourselves if we can go into a completely different direction. That's sometimes called a pivot, and find some tractions there. So this is the reality. Most people don't know this, but YouTube did not start off at YouTube. It started off as a video dating site. PayPal started off as a way to transfer money on Palm Pilots. Like you name the company, I can tell you what they looked like in the early days, and it's typically not what it became. I mean, even Instagram was bourbon before it was Instagram, right? So like people, I don't think realize that that pivoting in technology is part of the game.
Interesting.
And then back to, you know, if you're talking about profit first with, Michael, and I'm not going to try to pronounce his last name because I'd butcher it, but, giving yourself as much time to figure it out. So I always look at it as like, you know, like the companies that succeed sometimes are the ones that are hardest to kill, you know, and if they're, and that's why good, like 2 or 3 person founding teams where you have a technical person, a marketing person, and a business person that can live in a basement and, you know, survive off $1,000 a month for all three of them. As long as they have enough time, they'll figure it out. That's what I truly believe. So, you know, that's why I think if you're not figuring it out, you got to cut your cost to give yourself more opportunity. You got to reevaluate the business model to increase your gross margin to generate the profit to fund the future growth. So I get all the stuff he says. It's just a little different when it comes to tech.
Okay. Yeah. On your website, I've noticed that the main traffic driver seems to be YouTube. You know, you're very into it.
I just choose a channel. So I teach this thing called the Scaling Credo. And as part of the Scaling Credo, it's 1 year focus. So one channel, one product, one conversion tool, one market, 1 year. And that'll get you to $1 million in revenue in any business. So that's just something I teach. I decided when I started coaching, I'm only going to use YouTube because I don't want to travel around and speak on stages. I have 2 young kids. I don't need to coach. I want to teach. I love doing it. YouTube felt like the right output. And then we add on some other stuff afterwards. Like I love Instagram. If you're not following me on Instagram, then you're missing out on some fun stuff.
I will do.
So yeah, I love Instagram and I obviously publish all over the internet, but I'm a big fan of YouTube.
Can you explain the process a little bit? Like just for people listening, this one channel, one, you know, 1 year, one conversion, one?
Yeah. So most founders or entrepreneurs, and this is the same, somebody asked me if that was the same thing. Yes. I'll use the word founder because it's more of a tech lingo, but entrepreneurs, most entrepreneurs fail in growing because they don't focus enough on a thing that works. It's so funny. I was looking at one of my clients, new clients yesterday, and I was looking at their growth for the last 12 months and it went like this and then dropped. Okay. And they came to me on the drop and they're like, we need help. And I said, do you know what you did on this month before the top spike? He goes, yes. I said, what was that? They go, partner webinars. Cool. Did you stop doing that? Yes. It's that simple. You were doing the thing you knew to do to be successful. And because it was working, you thought maybe I got to go do something else instead of doubling down. Right? So literally that's all the scaling credo is about, is saying, find the channel, and it could be partners, it could be paid, it could be publishing content, it could be affiliates, it could be whatever you want to do. Find something that seems to be working and just go as deep as you can and make it work and optimize it and don't do anything else. People come to you and be like, oh, you need to do, I mean, shit, I get people, like they see me online, they're like, you need to do this, you need to do that. So somebody said, you got to go do Quora. You got to go jump on Quora. Jason Lemkin did Quora. It's like, yeah, I could. But I also know about 15 other things I could do on YouTube to make YouTube better. And I know right. My YouTube numbers. I don't know my core numbers. So I'm going to focus on here until I feel like I've really exhausted that channel. And that, again, is just 1 year, right? I crushed my numbers in the first year because I focused. I think that people just, they're so insecure about doing the right thing that they move on to the next thing too quick. And it does allow them to build that traction and that stability. It's like building a fence, right? If we dig a hole 4 inches and put a post in there and do that for the whole backyard, I'm going to come along and I'm going to push the whole fence over with no strength whatsoever, right? Whereas if you want to build it deep, make sure that it's stable before you move on.
I think the difficult part is, one, figuring out which channel works at the beginning, and two, the lack of control. So I'll just give you one example.
There's only four. People make it complicated. Publishing, content, partners, other people promoting your thing, paid channels, Facebook, AdWords, et cetera, and product, giving away something free to build an audience, right? So just decide the one that you resonate with the most, that that you have some experience in ideally, and then just perfect it. Because it doesn't matter which one you do. And this is generally speaking to your, because I know you have a broad audience of agencies and some software folks and maybe just general business people. But that to me, it's like, look, if you're asking me to pick one that I love the most, it's partners. Why? Because they subsidize your cost to acquire a customer. They pay for the cost to bring you a customer, and then you pay them, and then you just do the work. So I love partnerships. That's a no-brainer. And I like paid because it's fast to learn. It's fast to learn about the market. It's fast to learn about, you know, what does it cost you to acquire a new customer and figure out the funnels and structures. Just most people won't spend the time, if they're doing blogs, for examples, they won't be like, okay, well, how many leads are we generating from our content marketing? They don't even ask themselves that question. We're just going to generate traffic. Well, F that. I don't give a shit about traffic. I want to know that that traffic is generating leads, and those leads are turning into opportunities, and opportunities are turning into sales. Same thing with paid acquisition. It's like, it's not just enough to boost a post on Facebook and be like, I'm doing Facebook ads. You need to actually be strategic about your funnel. So, you know, I could talk about this all day, but that's the big idea.
Yeah. The reason I mentioned that, because I have some clients that came to me and they built out these things you just said, like they built out a huge Facebook channel or a huge Instagram channel. And lately, you know, the engagement went down, right? Facebook was killing engagement on one, on the other. So like some of them are really sad cases, right? Like this lady built up 500,000 followers on Instagram and she just lost 80% of her engagement overnight. That's, you know, that's why I kind of feel like.
That's the channel though. Her problem was, is that's the channel. That's not the channel. Yeah. She didn't build her email list. She wouldn't have been sad if she built her email list. She would have been excited that she found a cheap way to acquire emails. That's her problem. Right.
So that's what you meant by the conversion thing.
It's not just about the channel for traffic. It's about how do you convert them into an opportunity. An opportunity has to have a phone number and email. How are you supposed to sell anything if you don't have a phone number or an email?
Well, you know, if you listen to a lot of internet marketers, it's kind of difficult figuring out how you can sell things. There's a lot of like little tricks and tips and hacks, but you know, the real business skills are not there.
And that's why I feel I've got an incredible opportunity for the people I get to work with, because not only am I an operator first and foremost, like I've built my companies and I've scaled and I can point to every different situation. You can go Google me, talk to my investors, talk to my previous employees. Like I'm a real business guy and I'm still a practitioner. So I still deploy my own money in other companies and support them. You know, so I just look, the internet marketers are going to do what they're going to do. But I think that, you know, if people took, this is the big thing. If people took the same level of care in hiring as they do for hiring employees, as they do for buying courses or assessing a coach or whatever, I think they would be better off. And I think what happens is they don't. They get caught in the momentum and the excitement and they don't sit back rationally and go like, do I really need this new magic pill? Or should I go and focus on the thing? And that's why I put out the content. If you watch my YouTube channel, it's all there. I literally give away 98% of everything I've ever learned. And I've spent millions of dollars on getting access, being around the right people, going to the events, you know, having investors like Travis Kalanick from Uber invest in my company, giving him 1% equity to advise me on fundraising. And like, so all of that, I give it away for free. And if anything, people are like, well, you should have more followers. It's like, well, I don't do entertainment content. That's just not my style, right? I leave that for everybody else. I create the content that I would want. I want to come in with a problem, get a solution, get the F off the internet and go work.
I like that. On that note, let's finish it up. Dan, where can people find you?
Yeah, so let's send everybody to Instagram.com/DanMartell, 2 L's of Martell. I'm at Dan Martell everywhere on the internet, but let's go to Instagram first and then I'll try to get you onto the YouTubes and the emails and stuff. But I really want you to get to know who I am and what I'm all about first, and then we'll take it from there.
Nice. We're done.
Awesome, Tom. Man, appreciate the time. We'll talk soon.
Yep. Take care.
Later, bro.
Thank you.
All the best. Bye.
Before you go, let me know if you enjoyed this interview. Leave a review, subscribe, join the Smart Brand Marketing Facebook page, whatever is easiest. Also, if you need my help marketing your online course, or know that your business could use some SEO, come to smartbrandmarketing.com, check out the case studies, and reach out to me. Once again, smartbrandmarketing.com. Until next time.